Continuation of the visit with Mr. Weaver this Sunday afternoon, 19th September, 71. Jim and Suzanne, Channel 2 right, and a continuation of the visit with Mr. Weaver this Sunday afternoon, 19th September, 71.
They can get it to sell, you see. It's better.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of times they build little sheds like they do, you know, these brick salts, you know, put out there,
mm-hmm.
big blocks. And they...
The shed, what, little ones there?
And we just put the pure salt out there, right, Cal?
Oh, yeah.
Of course, when it come rain, we'd have to go back and put more salt in there and melt the salt and run over. We don't have to get that up again, that was just these clippers.
You know what it is, it's this extra shirt.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
it's just anything
extra.
Oh,
nice,
yeah,
that's control.
It's really. Yeah,
that's
I don't believe it.
I don't need this whole thing over me, Faye.
No.
All I need is just a little strip around there.
Well, I've got most of this up
he
here.
He bought two, ain't he?
Yeah,
now I've got to put this on your neck.
Yeah,
now. Do a little bit right here. I want to check this right along here. Place it to the... You be still when I'm doing this finishing.
Well, let me tell you, Mr. Weaver, I got fidgets.
Yeah.
You know, I got to thinking out there the other day when we was talking out there in the shed after we worked on that cow's foot. Now that salt treatment, I did, you know, try and do what you saw according to your experience. Now we put that salt, say a half a coffee can, in that little bucket of water, you know, so it'd cover her foot.
Mm-hmm. And it melts and gets up and it'll go up on a leg as high as the water in the salt, too.
Yeah.
And that's what you wanted, you see, to be sure that you got above that. And I was able to watch the cow that day when it went to dry and see if she moved much and see if it was drawing her much.
Yeah.
And I've forgotten it, you know, and we all come walking away and I've forgotten to go back to watch her. When it gets dry, you see, that water kept it wet and it wouldn't, it didn't hurt her, but it drove just the same.
Yeah. I guess a cow would stand more discomfort and not show it than people would.
They're going to show it if it's hurting them pretty bad.
Yeah.
But as long as that's wet, it's not going to draw, it don't hurt.
Yeah.
It didn't hurt me when the doctor had me to put those poultices on.
Well, you can't put a poultice on a cow because you can't keep it wet.
Only thing you could do is you've got to tie it and then you got to have water. Just take a little and something and pour it on there once in a while.
Yeah.
That's the way I had to pour it on my hand.
Yeah, but you'd keep the poultice on your hand.
I keep it, then see when I took that one off, you know, and I figured it quit drawing, and I'd put another one back on, you know, a new salt. But if you can use that same salt for a long time, if you keep it wet.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, now, on a cow's foot, you just can't hang around there.
No, you'd have to take a sack and put some meal in there to make it hold together, hold us all.
Yeah.
And put it in there not wet.
Yeah.
Just make a poultice, mix of meal and salt up, put it on there, then tie it where it couldn't go over the foot and above the hurt, then it'll let that water run down into those places, you see. But it's better if you can get the cow to let us hold it in the foot, it's easier on you to do that, except that you just got to stay there and watch her.
Yeah.
And if you get the cow trained and it doesn't hurt her, she'll get to worry, she'll just let her foot stay in there.
Yeah. As long as she's eating.
Then you don't have to stand there, you got to either stand there and pour water on it or let her be eating so she'll stay, let her stay in there.
Now, where is that letter for you from the livestock market? Now, I want to tell you, Mr. Reeves, that this cattle business, at least as I follow it, is not what you'd call profitable.
Well, I'll tell you right now, sometimes it isn't, but sometimes it is if you happen to hit it lucky. I pulled cattle quite a bit ever since I was a kid.
Yeah.
And I bought cattle 1 year up in Alabama. I went up there and I was sick and I couldn't work. And I decided I'd buy up a few cattle and put them in the pasture. My father had a large pasture. And I bought about 10 or 15 head and put out there. And that fall, I couldn't sell them what I paid for them in the spring. I had to trade them all summer and lost it. See, the market went down.
Mm-hmm.
It went half as high as that fall as it was the fall before. And I bought on high market and sold on low market.
Now, well,
you hit that, you lose. But I've done this. I bought expecting to get maybe 8 or 9 cents a pound and maybe get a cent or two more pound to pick up.
Yeah.
And after you learn the time of the year and buying and selling like that, there's a certain time that the market goes down on certain grades of cattle.
I got chicken.
Well, you didn't have to say. Now there's the there's my calf crop, Mr. Weaver.
Calf crop.
Along with two cows. I see the cows did better than the calves. See these two steers up here and two steers?
Well, now they weigh about 500 or 600 pounds.
It gives the weight there.
Well, now then that used to be a few year or two ago was the highest price was. Used to be veal calves was the highest, but then,
yeah.
Then the one weighed about 500 or 600 pounds was the highest.
Yeah.
You got to watch those markets you buy and sell it.
Well, you see, there's the steers. That's two of them. You see,
steers.
The weight is for two of them, and that's pretty
720
small.
720 pounds.
That's pretty small, you see.
Yeah, for steers it is. How old was those steers?
Well, they came late, you see.
Late in spring?
Yeah.
Well, that wasn't too bad. Then.
Now, I got one steer down here where it says 40 cents a pound.
Uh-huh, right here.
Yes. Now, that's
$5.15. That's
like
a highest price. Now,
yeah.
You'd sold that a little early, you'd got more, got this better price for it.
Oh, he was the best one, you see.
Oh,
he was actually the only good steer I had.
Well, now, then you take the last report, and I was keeping up with it, around 500 pounds. Would sell for more than one that weighed up 725. That's a pass the large veal.
Well, I don't know about that, but he brought the most. See, they 40.
Well, I know
pounds.
That right there. See, he didn't weigh but 515 pounds. He was younger, and that's when you want to try to sell him when they weigh around 500 pounds.
No, he was older, and he was a better steer. He was the best one I had.
Well, how much did he weigh?
These were two steers, man.
See, that's two steers up there.
Two steers up
together
there.
Together only weighed
that. Well, now, that had a lot to do with it, too. Being a fat and...
Yeah. Well, let me tell you, Mr. Weaver, I'm not trying to get you involved in this.
Yeah,
all I'm trying to tell you is these steers were small, and it didn't bring much. And that's my calf crop. And the only one that was profitable was this steer here. And he was older, and he was bigger, and he was a pretty animal.
Well,
and he weighed 5 1/4, and he brought 40 cents a pound. Now, here's this cow. It surprised me.
This cat right here,
yeah,
cow.
She's about 15 years old.
And she weighed 1,035 pounds.
Yeah.
And brought 24.5 cents.
Yeah.
And she brought $253.50.
Yeah. And you see, she wouldn't calve anymore. She didn't settle this year, and she didn't have a calf this year.
Well, you take, now sometimes you take a cow as fat, if it's been poor and it put on a quick fat, you know, boy, they'll jump at that. That cuts the finest kind of steaks they are.
Yeah. Well, I'm telling you, that's a good price for a quarter, you see.
I reckon it was.
24 and a half cents. Yeah. Let me tell you. But like I was telling you out there in the shed the other day, I'd make money raising collards.
Yeah, I reckon you can sell them 12 months in
a year. I don't make any money. You see, it's a...
No, if you ain't experimenting and for somebody and them paying you for it, you can't do that.
See, that looks like a lot of money, $1,600. But I've got more than that in them.
I reckon you have. If you fed them and took care of them work and your work, you don't get nothing for your work.
Yes, the collars. Now, don't you know, like you saying back up in North Alabama, you could put in collars and raise them 12 months a year.
But by hole, keeping them down in the ground, buried, digging a hole.
Now, Faye didn't hear about that.
No, I didn't, Mr. Weaver.
We dug a hole down in the ground, you know, close to a barn or a house or something on the south side, and we had put these collars way down in the ground and have some of them this high, never been cropped, and the biggest, finest leaves you ever seen, that long and maybe that wide. All of that, you see, then we'd cut the collars off and sold them, we'd take those stubbles and put up and put out in there, and they'd grow right on through the winter down in the ground. And
down
next spring, we'd have sprouts come out from those, and they're good and tender, good to eat, too.
Yeah.
And collards are absolutely no good if you only get them sweet and good. It's to let it come a frost on them, then a rain, and then cut your collards to eat. They taste like you put sugar in them.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, well, that's right.
Well, why do we just put up with all this poor food, Mr. Weaver?
Well, I tell you what, so you bet on the cans too much and go in the chain stores. And it ain't half as good a food as what you can put up yourself.
Now,
the best canned food there are for you and does is the least harm.
You still clipping?
Mm-hmm. Is, the best is, I've been talking too much. I can't keep myself together on.
Yeah. Well, you can food. How long would these? How long could you keep them collards producing there when you?
Well,
put them in the
next
ground?
Spring when we got to plant them out, so we'd go to growing them again. We didn't care about them keeping. We'd get them up and sell.
And you get fresh ones.
Sell them or either give them to neighbors. You know, back at that time, see when we had. The neighbors, you know, and different ones, you know, when they had something, the other didn't have, they'd give them that, and then they'd bring them something that they had, you know. And now, then, if you have to sell it, you ever say.
Mm-hmm.
And
but
fruit,
now, that system, that system of putting your collars down where the frost wouldn't go, that would, how did you protect them?
Well, do you remember what I told you to put over there?
No, forget
we put a starve up here and put pine tops over them.
Oh.
You can't cover them with like your tent. You want for when it come a warm rain, and rain will go down in there.
Yeah.
And if it's too, of course, up there it rained nearly every week some, or snow one, and that snow would melt and go down there and keep them watered.
Oh.
And they wouldn't freeze down there in the ground.
No.
Now,
another thing we used to do, dig, go out under a shade tree there and dig down in the ground, dig down and make us a big cellar out under a shade tree there, and then put boards up here and cover it all up over it, you see. And you can put your milk or anything you want kept cold, your fruit and everything down in there, and it'll keep better than we'll in a deep freeze.
Yeah, and taste better.
Tastes much better. But now, I don't know whether you could do that here in Florida or not. I imagine you could. It's much hotter here, it's much longer,
that's
warm
right.
Season.
Yeah.
That's right.
You've got to figure all of that, you know. Only way to do is try experimenting just a little. That's the way that I did when I went to work for myself for about 4 or 5 years. I had about 2 acres that I was experimenting on something growing out there. And something that they said it wouldn't grow after, by.
Some of that was corn, wasn't it?
Some of it was corn, and well, it was a corn that grew there in Tennessee. And of course, Alabama's not a corn country, but you can grow enough to live on there. You can get, we grow as high as 40 and 50 bushel per acre there, and that's pretty good. But that's not like to go out west, just throw it and maybe die a time or two.
But your daddy wasn't very venturesome like that.
I'll tell you, Dad had so much, you know, there's about 12, 13 of us in family, and he had to work all the time and be a miner. He didn't have time to experiment much.
Yeah.
Well, and I went to work myself, you know. The first thing I did is put me 2 acres out there to experiment on to see and order to see. they didn't think that black-eyed peas would mature there. A lot of people didn't at that time. I said, well, ain't nothing like trying, but I couldn't get my dad to let me do that till I went to work for myself. Well, I turned in an order of seed from Hastings Seed Company. Paid them 40 cents a pound for the seed, and it was good. Now, I wasn't right nothing to do. I planted a few rows, you know, to see. And did. It matured and just as fine a seed as you ever looked at. So I kept that seed all that year, you see, and didn't let them say nothing to nobody. Next year, I turned in and planted every bit of the seed that I drove that year. And then, by that time, you see, I had more lots of seed, and I sold mine for 40 cents a pound. And they said that everybody told me, you know, that it couldn't be done.
Yeah.
And that was lima beans and butter beans. They thought we had to buy them out of the stores all the time. But you can, if you want to find out something, just go out there and plant a few rows of it and watch it.
Yeah, and watch it.
I try to tell, now I can't tell my brother nothing. He says ain't nothing to signs, and his wife says that. But you can plant peas of dark nights, and the insects and worms and bugs won't bother much. You plant them on light nights, they'll eat them up. You plant them on flower days, you won't get three peas that long, but you get lined up this high.
Yeah.
Now, a lot of people don't believe that.
The flower days.
But I bet her daddy, you farms that way some. I can tell the way she's talking.
No, Jim's grandmother.
Oh, where did
Jim
get goes with
the sign? They planted the crowder peas at the wrong time, and all they got was vines.
Well, that
was
peas that were hard to shell, and there weren't many in them.
Weren't nothing in it. Well, you see, now I knew better than that, but I farmed in about 7 or 8 years. And one day, I closed the barbershop on Thursday afternoon. Well, one day, I decided I'd go out there, and we didn't have a baseball game that afternoon. I was playing baseball then in barber. So that we didn't have a game that afternoon, I decided I'd go out there and had some good land.
Yeah.
Just like I have up at the house. Now, I went out there and planted me 5 rows. And 5 days, they was up that high. I said, oh, something wrong about that. Peas don't belong to come up for under 7 days. And I went in the house and I had a lady's birthday almanac and his own flower day. And they run all over everything, and the bugs, the insects, were just solid. Bumblebees and bees and all kind of insects just sucking these bees. And didn't let any of them get over that long, and they'd be before they'd bit there. And I didn't get 3 peas.
Flower day.
Now, that's when the sun and flower days. Now, you all get you can read your, it tells you on the calendar when to plant things. And you take some seeds you buy in these little packages, tells you when's the best time to plant it, and you go to look up and that's when it is, too.
Did you use an almanac for that?
What'd you say?
Did you use an almanac, find it?
Yeah. You know, one of the finest men you ever seen up there in Alabama married my father's sister, and he couldn't even read and write and sign his name. She taught him to read out all a lady's birthday almanac. And he could write good in a little while after that and read too.
A lady's birthday almanac.
Yeah. Did you ever see one?
No.
Well, now, then drugstores used to, and grocery stores used to always have them to give to the farmer.
You don't have one now?
I do when I can get it. I think I have one over there now. But,
Well, McCullum's, these drugstores all have them, Mr. Weaver.
Well, you'll go and call for them. If you call for them, sometimes you can get them. And sometimes they have to pay a little bit to get them, you see. But we didn't used to think anything about it. When I was in business and had stores and things like that, I kept them. I didn't think nothing about it. And every time a customer came in or someone came in, I'd ask them if they wanted one.
Yeah.
Give it to them. And then I'd tell them the experience I'd had and told them to try it and see. Then they'd come on back and trade with me, you see.
Was it big book?
No, it's just a little small, but not as thick as your hand.
I like that radio.
And about 7 inches long and about 4 or 5 inches wide.
And it does have the information in it.
It has. It tells you.
And it used to have more than it does now.
Now, I'll tell you another thing you can do. You can notice a sign when the sign's right along here, and you can go and to the doctor and let him pull your teeth, dentist, and let him pull your teeth, and they won't bleed any harder. But do not go and have any pull when the sign's in your heart. I like to bled to death the last time. I didn't know when to go, and they gave me an appointment then, you see, because no people that knows won't let you. I wouldn't if I'd known it, and they pull a pool here, and I bled over a quart. And I'd call them up, and they wouldn't do a thing about it.
Just the wrong sign.
And the sign was in my heart. When I went and looked it up, the sign was in my heart. And
when did you study the almanac, Mr. Wheeler?
Oh, ever since I was a little boy, and I'd hear Mother and Daddy read it. And they'd read it so we kids could hear it and learn from it, you know, and different things. And I watched it. Mother planted everything. She never did fail to make a good garden.
I see. You didn't have to learn that. You just grew up with it.
Well, you see, I was the one who did the plowing in the garden, see, for her. And she wouldn't let nobody go in there. And she wouldn't let the rest of them go in there with a mule would step on her stuff. And she didn't want you to let that mule step on one stalk or nothing either. I'd go in there and take time, and I had my mule trained good. Now nobody plowed it but me, and I'd go in there and I'd plow it, and she'd tell me, says, "I really you plow it." Says, "Rest of them gets mad, and they'll hit the mule in there, and you can't do that, cause that mule then go to run around and step on the stuff."
Oh, you just yes, and run your plow up through the road.
Yeah, or anything, and. If you get them excited, and the best thing is going on, just be quiet with the mule and have it trained, talk good and nice to it. And that's the way I did mine. You're going to have some more company.
No. Never tell you. Mr. Weaver, I used to wonder why people, I thought they were cranky with their...
No, it's not.
With their animals, you know. Uh-huh. I'd offer to go in there and, you know, plow out or harrow out the grass or something like that. And sometimes they'd say, "All right, go ahead," but I could tell they didn't like it. You see, I can see very well now.
You weren't plowing just like they wanted plowed.
Well, it just made the animal harder for them to.
Oh yeah, for them to it does. Just like that cow out there, if I'd went in there like you did and got out and touched her foot, she wouldn't let me more like they ever got in the bucket. That's the reason that I didn't say nothing, just let you do it yourself. Because when I walked up, I touched the cow and talked to her. I seen she did. She noticed I was a stranger. She didn't act like she did to you all.
Yeah.
And I say, I know that. I know there's that way. And it's about 1 out of 1,000 will hardly be still for a stranger. Hmm. It'll just let anybody touch it. And if you'll catch them, you know that hard part up here on the head?
Yeah.
Catch right back there and scratch them under there and just bring them from on up. And you can just hammer them anywhere you want to.
Yeah, I never did that.
I noticed that. I asked you the other day. And see, she wouldn't let me do that. She'd been used to it. Now, if I rubbed her a little bit and scratched her, they like you to scratch right back there. They can't scratch it, you see.
Yeah.
Just
like a dog likes you to scratch just behind his shoulder. He can't scratch that.
Now these out here, you see, you know those little stalls, those little slips, I call them out there?
Yeah.
Now that's where they grew up, you see.
Yeah.
They'd walk in there and stick their heads through them.
And feed,
and I'd feed them, and then I'd go in the back there and sort of rub them in the back.
Well, you always do that and pick up the feet. I used to do this, get wild mules that nobody couldn't handle and was afraid of. And I'd break them. I knew how to handle them. Of course, I had to tie them up sometimes because they're mean. And I'd break them and get them gentle. Well, I could throw the bridle reins down, walk around and say, "Pick up that hind foot." And he'd just reach it up to me, you know, that quick, you know. And they'd talk water to them in the stall, afraid to take them out. And I'd take them out, and first thing I did, put a saddle on them. But I've been so sore, they broke with me, and I've been so sore, I couldn't tie my shoes in 2 weeks. I got tired of that, and I quit. If they don't throw you, it hurts you just about as bad. Yeah. Because when they ride up this way and buck this way and hit way yonder, then ride up yonder and pitch way back over here about 10 or 15 feet, with you, and when they hit with the head down stiff, and they'll kick up. And if you ain't careful, you're going to keep going, too.
Yeah.
And the secret ends in riding, if you ever do go to ride. Right here, the grip right here is what holds you on.
Yeah.
If you've got a saddle and it don't go off with you, I had one saddle go off and I went about 10 feet with the saddle and me in the saddle too. But I didn't ever have one throw me out of a saddle. I've had them to fall and turn on the side and don't, most people grip that way and they fall on the, turn over on one side and you catch your leg. Mm-hmm. Well, you do that, you stick your foot out this way and just stand there. Keep your feet in the stirrup, and when they get up, then they'll get up. When they get up, unless the waller, some of the waller make you get up. But I never did get a hold of one of them. When that one got up, you know, it gets up with its head up first. It's got to throw its head up to come up. Then they get up on the front, by the way. I just kept sit right back down in the saddle, and they got up, and I rode them right on. They'll give up then.
Yeah.
They'll quit bucking with you. But I'm not kidding you. They can jerk you through every muscle in your sword. You can't understand it.
I believe it.
What did I think I heard Jim or Suzanne say that you had your dog in the magazine?
I registered them in the magazine.
Oh.
Dr. Hendricks and Bobby Hatchett and Donahue from Miami has put up $40 already to go to bring these pups and these dogs up. They give me the money to register.
Yeah.
See, Donahue won't get a dog for nobody but me because he used to live up here and hunt. And he likes these dogs and the way they hunt. He's got about four or five of the prettiest dogs you ever looked at. He was up here and he come got me and carried me over to McIntosh and showed them to me. He'd aim stay a few days, but he didn't have a good place and I didn't have a decent place for him to keep his dogs up there. And they're just as white as cotton, and he's got the sister of one of these dogs that I have up here. And they're putting the money up for me to register those dogs.
He lives in Miami?
Yeah.
And comes up here?
Yeah, he comes up here. And he comes up here and goes hunting. And he was up here and he got a call and had to go back down there and couldn't wait to pick his puppies up. And he told me he wanted to ship two of them down there to us. And you see, he had left two of his dogs to me to keep, and I sold them for him. And he wouldn't take the money. He wanted to wait and if he ever wanted any puppies, he could get them, you see. And he told me to buy three with that money, you see. And he come up and he got his two puppies. When he got back down there, I was going to take 3 days for to get down there if I shipped them. And he wouldn't have me to ship them. Then he drove back up here and picked up these two puppies. And he still got one of them, and one of them died. And he'd got another about a year or two after that. Come up by him and wanted them. I said, right there they are. I said, you got as much to say about it as I have.
Yeah.
And he got another one then. And I have to register them all and go back and to 55 and register my dogs I had back then to get to register these here young dogs I got now. Mm-hmm. And I'm bringing the papers up on them.
You eat down to Trade Winds every now and then?
I eat down now when I was working at McIntosh for Dr. Henry. I went down there and prepared some screens and fixed done a little work for him down there. That's a good place to eat.
We got to go.
Y'all got to, oh, well, listen, I didn't mean to kick up all y'all visit
no,
here.
Listen.
I didn't mean that.
No. We haven't planned to leave until about now.
Yeah.
We
got to
go down to Orange Springs next week, maybe.
Okay.
Okay.
I'd like to see Johnny Eldon. If y'all over right away at Orange Springs, going down towards the river, where it used to be a ferry, and Johnny Eldon down on his fine fellow used to be in Macanopy.
Okay.
And he got dogs?
No, he used to keep some deer dogs and bird hunting, duck hunting. He was a fellow I was telling you about, the best duck hunter I went out with. I've seen him go out with a box of shells and bring back 26 ducks.
Good Lord.
And the way he did it, he could get in the boat, and that's hard to shoot out of a boat and them flying, and two in there and a moving. Because I've hunted out. If I got half, I was doing good.
Yeah.
And Johnny, he'd learned to see, and he could tell when two were going across, and he'd shoot and kill those two a lot of times.
Yeah.
Well, if he missed a shot or two, you know, every once in a while he'd miss a shot.
Yeah.
But he come back with his box, with at least 25 ducks.
Yeah,
and I couldn't do it. If I got 12 and 13, I was doing good.
Rib, I didn't know you hunted.
Oh, I've hunted ever since I was a little kid. I've just about told you all my whole story of my life. If you had a book of it, you'd have a pretty good story.
No,
When did you tell it? I don't remember about your hunting. Shooting with a gun. I thought you just hunted with
dogs. I was good. I used to, you know, at these fires and they had those little ducks running across there? I'd shoot with anybody, low man pay for the guns and shells.
Oh, really?
It's just a little secret in that. Those little ducks running across, I was fixed you hit behind back here, back on the duck, it maybe not go over and turn over.
Yeah.
It may go over some and may just hit it and bounce a little bit and go on across. Well, you don't get credit for it then.
Yeah.
And we're shooting low man pay. And they had to go over and stay when you're shooting that away. Well, I shot 36 times up there in Gainesville. We had 12 bullets in one in each gun. And I shot 36 times. Reckon how many ducks I knocked over. Made to stay over. Out of 36. With a 22 rifle now. And I hadn't shot a gun in 12 months then.
Oh, you mean out there, just in the...
Yeah, it's just running across there.
Yeah.
Little ducks running across there, about that large. And the secret was, hit them just as the duck got his chest right at your breast. If you'd pull your trigger right there, it'd be about a quarter of an inch back here, and he'd go over and go on. He'd turn over and stay over every time.
Yeah.
If you hit him back here, he wouldn't turn over.
Well...
And I swore I'd shoot every one right that way. Well, I shot with three different fellas, and I knocked 36. I was emptied three guns and didn't miss a shot.
Oh,
nobody wouldn't shoot little man pay me. I'd shoot with the show people, you know, I was putting on those. I'd throw the balls with the show people at the door, the bottles and cats and things. You seen that?
Yeah.
At the past. Now, the secret is on that.
Yeah.
Is to keep your eye and mind on that cat's nose. Never take it off. When you turn it loose, that ball goes right there every time.
Yeah.
And you've got to be able to control your eye and mind.
But now your cat's not moving.
No, the cat's staying still. And
yeah.
It's just as hard. If you understand it, it's just as hard to knock one off not moving. But if you hit little on the side, it didn't go over and stay. And they have it sometimes fixed where they'll walk along there and there's a lodestone in it and they'll do that, you know, and do something in it and he'll stand there. Well, see, I used to pitch baseball, play a whole lot, and I had good control. It was my best part about pitching. And I'd, just like I was pitching the baseball, like I was in the box pitching. I'd turn it loose and keep your eye and mind on what you wanted to hit and you'll never miss it. And same way with the gun. You don't have to sight with a gun that's anything flying.
Well, now, if you...
anything flying, if you got your eye and mind, when you throw that gun up that way and shoot it, it'll come down. I'll kill with pistols. I'll kill hawks flying, rabbits running through the woods. But you got to, if you get your eye and mind off every bit, you'll miss it. And that's the secret in shooting or throwing a ball.
Get your...
eye and mind on the ball and keep it on there and or what you're doing and don't let it jump off. I couldn't do that now. I can't keep my mind together on account of these pains.
You mean it takes a lot of practice too?
Yeah, it takes practice. I didn't practice much near as much as a lot of them did. But
you kind of got to live with your gun.
Well, you've got to have a gun that balanced like you want it. You can't just pick up any gun and do that. I couldn't. But if it balanced like I've got a shotgun up there now, I might as well sell it for $200. May never use it anymore, but if I do, I've got a good one and I've got confidence in it and I'm going out to hunt. See, if I go shooting in that gun jar and kicks me, my head starts hurting. But I'm going to keep this gun because I loaned two when I was sick and couldn't shoot at all. I loaned two good new guns and lost both of them. One fella got killed in the car, run into a train, and the other one died, and I didn't know it, and people got my guns, and I never could find them.
I'm going to borrow one of them.
I told you, I don't lend them anymore.
I'm going to buy one while you're still in business.
You know what I'll do?
I'll go with it. You'll go with it.
No, I'll pick up an old shotgun, no count, and he won't come back no more. I'm just kidding. I wouldn't do you that way.
You know, these days, that's sad when you let a good gun get away from you.
Well, listen, I'm going to tell you, you can't buy them now. It took me 10 years to get a hold of one like this.
Yeah.
And a fella came from Apalachicola and wanted two dogs. And he had a 30-30 Marlin rifle. And he gave me that and $25 for two young dogs. He didn't have the money to buy them, you see. But he had the gun in the spring of the year, and he figured he'd pick up money and he wanted those two dogs. And they knew the stock of them that I had, you know, and came from Apalachicola here to get dogs from me. Because they'd hunted with the stock, that same stock of dogs, you know. And that's part of the same stock I have now. So that these people, they came over here and they didn't have the gun with them. And I said, well, carry the dogs on, send it to me. They sent it on. But they have never sent me $25 yet.
Well, Mr. Weaver, let me tell you, those old carnivals, you know, I never could do that.
Well, you got to get your eye in mind exactly what you're doing with that.
Yeah.
You can't think of nothing else. Like playing baseball. If you got your eye in mind on that ball and don't watch the pitcher how he turns it loose.
Watch the ball.
Don't listen to what nobody says to you. Just keep your eye and mind on the ball and keep yourself in position. I always stood up this way and come back this way. You know why I was rocking that way? I was relaxed. And just as I hit the ball, I gripped myself and that ball grew so much farther.
Oh.
And me being a little fella, you know, they didn't figure that I could bat one over fingers they couldn't get. But well, here's the way I did it. I'd just be rocking this way. When the ball came here, I got this way. And if it's outside, I stepped over here.
Oh.
As it went down, and I caught the ball on the outside.
Well, you've got a sort of a balance there.
Yeah, and just
where you can shift your weight.
As limber as you can be. Then I put my whole weight, and I stepped again the ball that way.
You got to shift your weight right fast.
Yeah, right fast.
I know you can't hit it with your arms.
Now, some of them tries to hit them out of the way, and these big lead pitchers, you don't start to just hit this way. That ain't the way to hit a ball if you're a little farther. As his end so big as can,
yeah.
You've got to bring your weight against it and grip. And the spring in your foot right here does a lot of that too.
Oh.
Just like when I was pitching.
Oh.
When I was pitching, when I went to throw a speed ball, I'd come up this way, I'd step up on the mound this way, and I did. I turned it loose just as quick as I could, and my arm straight. And when I wanted it to curve, I twisted the arm. If you twist your arm out of the way, it'll go to breaking about halfway there in the batter, you see it breaking.
Well, now that would carry over into your rifle shooting.
What'd you say? That would do what?
That would help you out when you come to shoot a rifle.
Well, anything, you see, it's keeping your mind in mind.
Yeah.
That's what made the ball go where you wanted. It made me keep my eye in mind on that ball. Sometimes I'd get it impressed, so I'd just shut my eye and throw it where I wanted to throw it. And then, of course, his practice had a lot to do with it, you know.
Oh, yeah.
And,
but it's a whole lot more than just practice,
right? Oh, yeah, you got to figure that batter how he's swinging that bat before he wants that ball.
Yeah. Well, now, let me tell you what, let me see. They had those ducks, and like you said, they were just little fellas.
Little fellas, and they'd be running across that. Now, those little bitty ones sitting still over there. I shot with a fella in Ocala after I'd knocked those 36 off up there, and nobody wouldn't shoot with me anymore. I said I'd never beat the fella anymore, but one, I'd shoot at something else to keep my eye in mind, you know, and miss the duck. And got down to Ocala, there's a fella in Micanopy that's been beating everybody around, you know, but he hadn't ever shot with me. I'd see fellas hold a cigarette out that way and let him shoot the fire out of it. With a hand, but I won't do that.
I
was good, but I knew I was as good or better than he was, and I beat him at Ocala shooting. And first ones we shot was one running across, and I'd always tell them, go ahead and shoot first, and I'd know what I had to do. Then he knocked off three of running. He wasn't used to shooting at those running. He didn't knock off a three. Well, I just knocked off four enough to beat him, and then I shot at something else and didn't let him know I could shoot, you know. He said that he wanted to shoot those sitting still. I said, okay, go ahead. We shot what I wanted to shoot at first now. I said, you go ahead and shoot those off. Well, he began shooting and knocked all off but one. Well, I knew what I had to do. I had to get 12.
Yeah.
I began, some of them said, if I was you, I'd just pay for his gun and save my 25 cents. They didn't know that I didn't shoot but to knock off at four ducks, you know. So that I went ahead and asked this fellow that said that. I said, will you count them while I shoot and laughed? And I went shooting, you know, and he counted, and that's why when I got down to 12, he says, 12. He said, well, I'll say. I said, well, now, I told that man I'd shoot him low man pay, and I wouldn't have been sport at all if I hadn't done that. Because I says, he paid for that when I beat him. And I said, wouldn't have been right if he'd not shot sure to try to beat him and been fair with him to just pay for it. So I said, I went ahead and shot to win. Well, nobody else in at Ocala wouldn't shoot with me. They seen it, and everybody around there, and they got talking around about how I could knock them off, and nobody wouldn't shoot me, old man paid. Well, if I picked up a gun, it cost me a quarter to shoot.
Yeah. You just had to pay for your own shoes.
Yeah, I said, pay my own shoes, because low man pay. All right, they're like those dogs, you know, and all like that. I had one fellow that I was making up, I was about $7 or $8 to the good. And this fellow, this show man, he came around there and the next night and called me off at the running show. He says, we're having a time to get by. I says, we've been losing money. He says, if you don't mind, don't throw tonight. Well, I'd throw the night before, but I'd lost that night when I went in to throw. My arm was sore, I wasn't used to throwing. And I didn't mean so. So that I had about $7 to the good, and I bought me a Simmons watch chain with that $7 and wore it plumb out. A Simmons, you know, cost, let's see, you may cost around $7 or $8 what the Simmons chain cost. You know, this has a high price chain, solid gold.
Yeah.
Back at that time. So I told the man, I says, I don't see you go broke. I says, I won't throw tonight. Well, my arm was sore, and I probably have lost every that money back. But I beat the show man that night. They come around and told with me. Then they got down to putting, you know, they had 9 bottled up to start with. Then they got to putting 1 bottle down and wanted to see if I could knock off one. I'd still knock off that one bottle for them. And after we got through and all went down but one, as some of them fall and wouldn't go over, I said, see out in this line there that's, I had another throw, you see, I had 3 throws. I said, see that bottle line there with the butt end towards me? I said, watch it. I took them and just kept my hit right on the end of it and knocked that off. And I had one ball like the soldier. And it didn't have to show when I won that one offer that night. That was the night before. But I would, if I went back and sold that night, at Haleville, Alabama, I was about $7 to the good up there. And my cousin was $3 in the hole. And he kept wanting to throw, and I slipped down and told him what to do, to keep his eye and mind on it. Instead of he got to come on up, and I gave out, and I lost my, and I kept on, I lost $3. I sold too much. See, I give out on it. And I said I never would do that anymore. I'd just quit when I was a winner. And from then on, I'd always quit.
Your cousin was pretty good, too?
Well, he got better. He was good, too. And And come on up, and he won, and I lost, because he could. He
but that
just hole.
That one time.
Was that night, you see, and after a while, he got, after I slipped down and told him to keep his eye and mind on it, he settled down, and then he come out about, I think it's $3 or $4 to the good, and I was about $3.50 in the hole, because I'd give out. Couldn't keep my eye and mind on what I was doing.
Well, Mr. Weaver, I'm saying, those the show people that ran it, now, I don't know whether they expected to be especially good themselves or not.
They was good. And you had to be good, if didn't they, you'd pay for them all.
Yeah.
And pitching in those buckets, you've seen them where it says, this way, and had a hole down here, and if you could make it go through that hole. Well, they had some cork or something in the middle of that. If you hit center, it bounced back out.
Oh.
And the secret in that, I stand there and I watch how they're doing it, and they're beating. They could just beat you one, then they'd quit. And there's a, when you let it, you pitched it, and pitched it to go in the buckets, you know, but you sold it to dogs and cats. Well, I noticed that every time that they pitched and hit the rim of the bucket, it rolled on in there. And I noticed how they did. They turned, tilted this way, and made the ball be turning this way. I noticed the show people and caught that. And I tried that, and it worked, and I'd pitch and hit the rim, you know, and it'd go on in there. Then if I went to pitch it and hit up in there, I rolled it the other way, and it'd pull it right down through the hole. They turned it loose just exactly different.
If you rolled it out
of your hand, if you're going to hit the rim, and it'd roll in there, if you let it roll off your hand. But if you wanted it hit up on that cork, if you'd tilt your hand this way, make the ball turn back this way, when it hit that cork, you'd go right down through there. And that's the way I learned that. I watched the show people.
I don't believe I know that.
I watched the show people, how they turned it loose, you know. I was watching them, how I'd go in there.
Now, hi, Mr. Weaver. what was that? A place where you had an alley to roll your ball?
No, you was pitching it over yonder in a bucket,
just
like a cedar bucket, you know.
Yeah.
And they had to fix something in there that would throw that ball back out. And if you let it roll out of your hand and hit the edges, the rim of the bucket, like this is the rim of the bucket there, it would roll right over in that bucket.
Yeah.
And if you were going to hit in the center of it, you'd pitch your ball this way and dip your hand and make the ball turn back this way, and hit that and pull it right down through that hole. And I learned that from watching the show people do that.
Oh, so that's the way you're supposed to do it.
Yeah. And it's just a secret. You know, there's a secret in all of these things. And just like play shooting pool, you got to figure how much English to make it crook around another ball and hit the cushion, how many turns. If you put English on it, it'll go beyond and turn one way and hit the other cushion, it turns back the other way again.
Did you know some of the show people?
No, I didn't know them. I just see them that night.
But you just watched them?
Yeah, I just watched them. That's the way you learn something. That's where I learned how to measure and saw straight lines. Watching carpenters and other boys, mm-hmm. and see how they did it, you know, and notice how they did it.
They don't have to have a pencil mark to saw a straight line?
Well, they'd make a pencil mark, and I asked one of them before I near grown, I says, isn't it better to measure, if you're not sure you're correct on your measuring, isn't it better to measure twice and just go ahead and cut it wrong? This carpenter says it's better to measure three times than it is to cut a piece wrong. And I impressed it on my mind, too.
Oh.
I never did forget that, what he told me.
Yeah.
And if I'm not sure now, I can't remember. I can't keep up myself too good now.
Yeah.
But if I measure anything and I'm not sure, I'll measure four or five times before I cut it.
Have you gone to the shooting gallery at a whole lot of those carnivals?
Well, yeah, I went to quite a few, but in the fairs, in the fairs in the fall of the year, when there's in Alabama, we boys would go ride to town, you know, in the fall, you know, to go to the fair, see all the exhibits and everything. Well, they had all this going on, you see.
Yeah.
And
When you got on here, you didn't do it so much?
Yeah, I did it when they happened. They used to show up here and make an opiate whole lot. That's why I won 17 up here and make an opiate.
Oh, yeah.
If I came and fought it.
Yeah.
But I didn't show the next night. I'd probably have lost my 17 because my arm was sore, but I wasn't used to sore.
Well, now, some of these fellas are still over there. You're sober?
I don't know where they've been there. Let's see. I don't believe they are. There's people that come from Wilson and Old Cow and Gainesville.
Yeah.
There's these carnivals.
Yeah.
And they were just sports, you know. We
just,
we do it for fun. We weren't doing it to make money.
Yeah.
But we tried not to lose no money.
Yeah.
Sometimes we'd lose. I've lost lots of times before I learned how to show and what I had to do. You like playing pool. Look, two low men pay playing French pool. Well, heck, well, when I first went to play, and I, of course, nobody wanted me for a partner. I didn't know how to play. I think myself, well, it won't be long until you all be wanting me for a partner after I learn how. I'd watch how they cued the ball and how they did and everything, and then I'd practice it. You know, I'd try to do it too.
Yeah.
Well, I soon got on to it. And what aim is to put on to make you do certain things. But once another fellow knew more than I did, that's the way you learn. And practicing things. Well, I had to pay for a while and wasn't long until I was the best player in town. But.
You mean you picked up pool too?
Yeah, I played pool. I run a pool table here for a long time.
Well, that's after you learned how?
Well, I learned how when another fellow had a job. Then I bought him out, you know. Well, there'd be professionals come too, you know, and they'd be beating this fella. And he and I was good friends, you know, and he'd slip over to the fur house. And he'd run the barbershop then, and I was running the fur business for 90 days. Then I'd go back and hit and run the barbershop. And I eventually bought the shop back again. I owned it twice.
Mm-hmm.
And he'd come over and tell me, he says, you know, if ever come in here and says, I ain't making no money, he beats me every day. Yeah. He said, how about coming around and shooting for me? I said, well, you go back and don't let him know you came around here and told me. And I said, I'll go around and play and see. I wasn't hard, and this fellow was. He'd been playing a lot of other, you know, get where you can't keep your mind on what you do. I'd go around now, you see, and I didn't beat them all. Some of them beat me more than I did them, but I didn't lose as many games as he did. And he'd come get me to shoot for the house. He didn't charge me if I lost. To get me to come around and shoot, because I could beat him playing.
Yeah.
But now at first, he's the one I learned under. This man was.
Uh-huh. Who was he, Mr. Williams?
Charlie, it was a fellow by the name of Charlie Wynn, but he's been gone from making up a long time.
Charlie Wynn?
Yeah. And so that.
So you're old sidekicks?
Yeah, well, he was the first man I worked for when I came to Florida. See, I came down here, I wanted to learn how to truck for them. Well, I got out and seen how much some of them was losing, you know.
Yeah.
And times were pretty hard. You could hardly get a job.
That was in the 20s.
Yeah. And that was about 21 or 2 and long in there. It was hard then.
Mm-hmm.
So that I went ahead and went, he wanted me to barber. Well, I'd run two barber shops up in Alabama. And I'd barbered nearly a couple of years, you see. I decided I was going to do something else, you know.
Oh, you'd already had barbershops up in Alabama.
Well, I'd run for other people I didn't own.
Yeah.
But I learned, I started cutting hair when I was about 13 or 14 years old, cutting out in the country for nothing. I wore out some hand clippers before I went to charging 10 or 15 cents.
Yeah.
You know how it was. Well, I started to come to Jacksonville and take a barber course at Jacksonville. I always did want to come to Florida so that... I $2.50 selling the horse. I think it was $10. Fell off in $10 for I wanted to sell my horse, and I could have sold it and come on down and went to the college. But I was glad I didn't after I found out that how they taught them in the barber college.
What are they trying to do out there, Faye?
Well, let me get ready and go and let y'all do your work.
Just getting a couple of the horses up.
Oh, I see.
I,
what do you mean, get to work?
Let y'all tell. I know y'all have work to do all the time, looking at these cattle and everything. I want to check on this just a little bit. I haven't seen one of them in a long time.
to the cows.
Here you got one, 2.15, brought you 42 cents.
Yeah.
That's pretty good.
Yeah.
$90, that's a small
cow. She was just a baby.
Yeah.
Yeah.
She was the worst one, Mr. Wheeler.
Worse than you had, sorry than you had.
Yeah.
Well, she was just the age that they wanted for veal. She was a veal cow.
Yeah.
Did you ever see Mr. Whitehurst over here at Raleigh? Close to Williston?
Yeah.
Did you ever sell him anything?
No, but I've seen him at the livestock markets buying animals.
They go up by and buy. Well, he'd rather come over here and buy your stuff. Of course, he wants most of his. He did have a contract. I reckon they still got it. And
I would sell to him, but I'm not up to his standards, you see. He wants the very best.
Well, I know it. He wants the best.
And all he wants is steers.
Yeah,
and
that's right.
And he wants some pretty good size.
He wants about 500 pounds.
Yeah.
Around 500 pounds.
Yeah.
That's what he used to want, and I think they still want to about.
He'd like them bigger than that if you get them.
A little bit larger. He don't buy up 700 and 78. But they used to didn't buy them on just about that size. They stall feed them so long.
Yeah.
Then they sell them. And Richardson's down here at Emerson used to sell him a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
I don't know whether they still sell him now or not. I just like to do that. I used to go up and buy lots of them off the market, and I'd go up, then I'd sell and swap. I'd swap with people. Oh, it's a racket. I lost money sometimes. I lost as high as five on.
Well, it's one thing to make money on the market, you know. I don't know. I think that's sort of tricky.
Well, listen, it isn't tricky.
Well, let me tell you, this business, now, like you said, like going to the carnival.
Uh-huh.
As long as you do that just for sport and the low man pays, you know, you can pick up a
dollar
to buy
two,
your watch chain.
You don't.
But if you get to be a ringer at it, Mr. Weaver, it's a wholly different thing, isn't it?
Well, if I was going just to make money, I don't want to do that.
Yeah.
But just like that, I do, like you and I woke up, we don't care which one pays, but we do want to beat the other.
Yeah.
I have let people beat me just to be a good sport.
Yeah.
When I could have beat them. And playing checkers. I like to play checkers. I've done that too. And there's a fella, well, he is a peculiar fella and couldn't hardly talk and say anything. And I told Jack Herron that Jack Herron's a good checker player.
I didn't know that.
Oh my goodness. He was good. If he can keep himself together, you know, he was hard to beat. And we used to play for tournaments up there and make it open, see who was a champion. And the way I did one time, we was going to play, and I told Jack to go, he wanted to play first. He got out there to play, and he beat everybody in town. Well, I drove off and rested.
Yeah.
He played that, and he was getting tired. I came back, and he had won every game, you know. And I came back, and I set a little trap, and everybody said, you get beat, you play that. And Jack just jumped into it. I gave him two men for one. Put up out where he get two men for one, go over there and go to the king, get him a cane. And the way I had my men moved, you know, when he done that, I reached over and gave him one and got three of his, and I had the cane on the other side of the board. And I beat Jack two best out of three, you see.
That's right. Now, where was that at?
That's up at Micanopy. Now, there's some good checker players back a few years ago, and we used to play checkers up there. It's good sport. Now, that'll make you keep your mind on your business.
In the drugstore?
No, all over town, anywhere. Around Frank Clyde used to be postmaster, and we'd play out there in front. We couldn't play back in the post office, you know. And he'd come out there and play, and his wife was working in that too, you know. And after he get the mail, wasn't busy, he'd come out. Of course, they wouldn't see him about anything. He had to go back in there and look after it, you see.
Uh-huh.
And he was a good player. They had about seven or eight good players. They had some good ones over Williston. I passed there one day, and I'd hurt myself, and I didn't know it, and I'd started back to Gulf Hamlet to work, and I backed out. I decided I'd stop and see if I could play a game of checkers and see if I could get easy, and before I went on back down, I finished my job. So that I went in there and played 2-3 games of checkers, and they just beat the socks off of me that afternoon. And I knew the move that was moving and knew how to beat it and everything, but I was suffering so bad I couldn't keep myself together on it. If you make one mistake with a good checker player, you can't correct it.
Yeah.
You've got
then
to.
Then you're struggling all the time.
Yeah. These here professionals that go through from Jacksonville that plays professional checkers, and they play by numbers.
Yeah.
And they all had it named, and the high doctor move was supposed to be the any move on the board, according to the book, you know. Well, I never did study the book. I figured it's better to study and figure the board and not play by numbers. So that as professional came in there and he beat them all, and I didn't want him to know it, but if anyone gets right behind me talking out of the way, I'll bend over talking and kidding me, you know. And they'll do that to make you, sometimes to make you move wrong just to get the life at you.
Get your rattle.
They got me there, and that professional got 3 games, you know. And after I settled down, I said, I don't even pay no attention to nobody. I said, he's not going to beat me anymore. And I sat down there, and we got about 5 draws, and he got up and left. He couldn't beat me anymore.
Oh, yeah.
And he was playing the high doctor move, and I could just tear that up every time. And I eventually got to where I knew what move would beat that professional move. And I went up to Alabama, and I beat everybody up there with it. And they was using the high doctor move. Well, I'd just tear that up that quick, you know. And my brother-in-law, he was so good up there. He had played in Missouri up there at St. Louis for a championship up there and won it. And he was telling me all about that. Well, he started off with that high doctor move. And I just eased over on life. I didn't say anything. He started playing. He says, I've been playing these other fellas 11 men. I better take 10 men. I better take 11 of you. You used to be a pretty good checker player. Well, I played ever since I was a kid, you see. So that we played a couple of games, and I beat him easy, you know, with me with 12 and him 11 men. We started off the third game. I reached over to kid him. You know, he was bad to talk you out of. I reached over and picked up the 12 checker and put it over in that crowd. You know, I said, I believe if you'll use 12 men, it'll be more interesting to me. I said, you don't interest me with 11. They all laughed at him, you know. Then I beat him right on that afternoon, and that night at 11 o'clock, I still beat him.
Yeah,
and next morning, I was tired of driving, and I shouldn't have played this so hard. I was tired of driving, next morning, he wanted us to start playing checkers, and you couldn't get him up if somebody's beating him until he got to where he beat. After a while, I wanted to visit, you know. I didn't want to just sit down and play checkers all the time. So I just eased over and let him beat me. When he got ahead, he was satisfied with it. And that's where I got rid of him. But he never did get on how to play that checker. Well, when I went up at my father's funeral, he got the checkerboard, and he started to play, and then he used a high doctor move then, and I still beat him. I used that same move that I used on.
Mr. Weaver, let's go out and see what's going on out there.
Let's go. Yeah, I want to get out there. I've got the door. I need to be at that.
You got your stuff?
No, I haven't. I better.
Let's get this stuff out of the pocket.
And she's doing perfect this here.